12 minutes past 8, time now for the Big Picture program with AB Dawji. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Well, you sound very far this morning.
Well, I'll be going very far. I got my mountain bike ready to do the hills of Isipingo.
You know, one of those new gadgets where you sit at home and you just cycle and it has a screen in front of you making you think you're going through the different mountains. That mountain bike.
With me, I'll ask you how many followers you got on Facebook.
More than before the article. Story that caught your eye this week.
Just a quick one, and I came across this story this morning. Now look here, I'm not a party pooper, nor do I want to embarrass anyone. But listen to this. It says here in the headlines, people who share inspirational quotes on social media are less intelligent, says a study. And it says every social media has that person that shares one quote too many, whether it be on Twitter and or Facebook or a picture on Instagram. If you are inclined on that side of being irritated by such social media behavior, then science has some good news. People who share inspirational quotes are stupid. More specifically, the study results indicate that people who are receptive to inspirational quotes have a lower IQ. Other associations found are that this pool of individuals are more likely to hold religious beliefs, are prone to believe in conspiracy theories, and believe in the paranormal. It should be noted that the study, which was led by Gordon Pennycook, a cognitive psychologist at the University of Waterloo. By the way, I must hasten to add, just in case you out there are feeling a little disappointed by this news, other researchers found that this study is unscientific because the experiment was carried out on a very small group of people. So please continue filling up everyone's inboxes with sweet, syrupy, nice, cute sayings, eh? Okay. Right, now to another topic, Maulana. And this is a very important topic. And the topic is Halima Kala.
Yeah.
You know, I've been very cruel in deliberately avoiding this nice old lady. And it's just not right. So, you know, on Sunday, Maulana, I'm leaving for Spain and Morocco. So I decided to make mulakat with her before I leave. I was feeling a little bit guilty. So I bought some cakes and we sat in a veranda and had some tea. It was really nice. Eh? And she said to me, Dawji, you know everything. Yesterday I was asking my nephew Imran, who's that fella that Zuma fired? And as he closed the front gate and went out, he said, ne. What does that mean, Dawji? I told her that I would ask Imran. Anyway, so we chatted and she said, so nice, you're visiting me. You must come and take me for a drive when you and Roxana go out. Take me to some, if you like, you can take me to some restaurant to eat. A long time I didn't go. Don't worry, I will pay. Oh, I felt so sorry for her. I said, okay, when I come back, we'll go. Where you want to eat, Kala? And she said, take me to that place in the pavilion where they sell mug, mung dal. Imran said he eats there every week and the food is so good. I want to go there, man. Well, I was very confused, Maulana. What place is that? And I asked her, what place is that, Kala? And she said, that place that sells beans, you know, what beans they sell, the sugar beans. I want to eat there. What else they got? Only mug and beans? I cut the tea party short and excused myself. There was a non-existent client waiting for me at the office.
Okay, now, any new developments in the Muslim world?
Well, you know, Maulana, I spend a great deal of my time pondering about what's happening in the Muslim world, trying to make sense of what's happening, and of course, there are so many things happening all over the place. We seem to be making headlines every day. There is the mass movement of humanity across seas and continents. You know, that's a really pitiful sight, the refugees. Heartbreaking also are the conflicts in Muslim lands. Muslims killing Muslims. And of course, there are so many undercurrents, dynamics, subterfuge, conspiracies, agenda. It's actually very hard to keep up with them or to uncover them even. And when you just seem to uncover one layer of treachery, there's another and then another below that. Someone somewhere pulls the strings. Somewhere some people are used as pawns in a global chess game. Useful idiots, as they are called, ready to be manipulated by dark forces. So much to think about. And so, as my mind was wandering over such issues, suddenly a light bulb lit up, a eureka moment, a sudden realization. So what was this amazing thought that came into my head? Well, maybe it's not so profound or very brilliant, but nevertheless, I thought it sort of set a perspective about an issue that maybe you listeners are very familiar with also. Here is the proposition. There are two groups of people who are responsible for discrediting Islam and Muslims. Two sets of people who are bringing Islam into disrepute, creating a negative image of Islam. And let's start with the first group. These are the bigots, the Islamophobes. Actually, it's quite an industry, this Islamophobia. This anti-Islam industry. There are dozens of well-financed organizations and individuals all over the United States and Europe whose primary purpose of existing is to make Islam and Muslims look bad, very bad. And, of course, there are some familiar names such as Pamela Geller, who heads the Stop the Islamization of America organization. There is also the Somali woman who I think I mentioned last week, Ayan Hirsi Ali, who went to Holland, made a terrible movie about Islam, became an MP there, and then ran off to the U.S., where she's given a media platform to spew her anti-Muslim hate. There are hundreds of such people in the West. The primary source for the material, for ammunition to attack Islam, is the Quran and Hadith. They go through the scriptures and find verses and texts that make it appear that Islam is a bloodthirsty religion that believes in mindless violence. Killing is at the core of Islam, they say. They pick out verses that say kill the infidels and so on. They put these verses on billboards. They dish them out on pamphlets with two or three dozen other quotes from the Quran and Hadith that speak about death and destruction that's guaranteed to scare anyone. Make anyone believe that Islam is totally evil and not a religion of peace, as its followers claim. They deliberately find such texts and reproduce them without any explanation whatsoever as to why these texts were mentioned. What was the context? What were the circumstances? What happened that gave rise to that particular revelation at that particular time? No context. When there is no context, no explanation, no background facts, then people will jump to the wrong conclusion. And to be honest, you can't blame them. I used to see, when I say can't blame them, I mean those people who are reading and jump to conclusions. I used to see two brothers jogging every morning here in Isipingo. Whenever I passed them, I got a little irritated. They looked thin and unhealthy and ran slowly and seemed to be really struggling. They didn't seem to be enjoying their jogging. In fact, they were sweating and huffing and puffing and so on. I saw them almost every day. And as I said, I was a little bit irritated with them. Why are you torturing yourselves? I would hear myself saying. Then one day, I said this to my friend as we drove past these two guys. Hey, I don't know why they do it. They don't seem to be enjoying it. And my friend replied, shame, eh? Both these brothers got a rare heart problem, and they have to jog every single day in order to keep their hearts pumping so that they can maintain their health to a certain level, and so it will prevent them from dying. It will prevent them from dying, and therefore they have to jog. Well, to say that I was shocked and at the same time deeply ashamed is an understatement. From then onwards, I felt a deep sympathy. I felt a deep sympathy for these two brothers as I passed them, and occasionally I even smiled and waved at them. Here's another story. A lady sitting in the departure lounge of Owa Tambo Airport waiting for a flight to Cape Town. The flight is delayed. She sees nearby a man with his two children, aged around 5 and 8. They are restless. running up and down. They come up to him and say, "Dad, give us money for popcorn." And he just takes out a whole lot of money and he gives it to them. A few minutes later, they come and say, "Dad, give us money for sweets." And he gives them money. A little later, they say, "Dad, we want to buy some toys from that shop over there." And he gives them a few hundred rand notes. The woman watching all of this is horrified and highly irritated. And she couldn't contain it any longer. And she says to him, "Excuse me, I don't mean to interfere, but your children keep coming up to you and asking you for money, and you just give it to them. I'm sorry to say, but this is no good for their discipline. In fact, you are spoiling your kids, and they will grow up to be very bad adults." Well, the man slowly looked at her and said, "My dear, let me explain. You see, my kids and I are going to Cape Town. My wife went to visit her parents in Cape Town a week ago. And just a few hours ago, I received a phone call to say that intruders broke into the house and killed my wife and her parents. So, really, I don't know how to break the news to my children. They are laughing and happy now, and soon they will be very, very sad." Well, the lady was stunned and completely speechless. Tears came into her eyes as she walked away slowly, feeling so ashamed of herself for judging this man without knowing the circumstances, the context of what he was doing or experiencing. Well, dear listeners, I went a little bit off the topic there, but I was trying to explain this issue of context. And so we have the Islamophobes who pick verses from the Quran and texts from Hadith in order to make Islam appear to be evil, a religion of blood and killing, a danger to the world. These hateful bigots make it their full-time business to attack Muslims. Now, let's look at the other group. This group also takes the text of the Quran and Hadith and give it a reductionist interpretation. Reductionist means reducing the meaning to just words, just that verse alone, just that quotation with little or no explanation about the context. If you do this, as I explained, then you are liable to arrive at the wrong conclusion, wrong interpretation. So, who is this group? These are Muslims. Muslims who look at these verses and texts in a very limited way. Then they see a general instruction contained in them, a directive, and they don't understand what gave rise to these particular words. So are you still with me, listeners? Scholars spend years and years studying the Quran and the life of Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Years and years of deep study, because there is so much to learn. And then someone arbitrarily picks a verse and decides, yes, this is what it means. There are so many, in fact, there are countless matters and issues that need to be finely dissected and understood, that one has to be a scholar of deep insight and knowledge to fully appreciate, accurately appreciate the verses and text. I'm really laboring the point. And why? Because, my dear friends, there is a well-known saying, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. I have read many articles where people justify all kinds of things, justify using Quranic text or root their arguments in the seerah. At first sight, I cannot say whether they are wrong. They seem quite convincing and persuasive. They sound right, in fact. But later I read the real context by many scholars of what these people claim, and I find that they are completely wrong. Let me give you an example. I heard that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam ordered the killing of a poet who wrote poems insulting him. Now, someone hearing these words, just these words alone, would conclude that poetry that insulted the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam was enough reason to kill a person. So they would do a similar thing, kill a poet and justify it by this particular incident. Also, those who are not Muslims will read this and say, wow, they kill a poet for writing offensive poetry? These guys must be crazy. But if you look at what really happened, then perhaps you would arrive at a different conclusion. Let me briefly explain what happened. The poet was a Jew by the name of Ka'ab bin al-Ashraf. Yes, he wrote poetry that was highly insulting of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. He also wrote poetry insulting Muslim women in the most shameful way. Very, very shameful. In fact, I read one of his poems about, and these are very crude comments about Muslim women. He wrote about the Battle of Badr and insulted those Muslims who were killed there. He also instigated violence and murder against the Muslims, but especially against the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. There was a treaty between a Jewish tribe and Muslims. He worked very hard to undermine this, making them believe, this tribe, that the Muslims were planning to attack them. This is high treason. This was against peace. This guy was a dangerous troublemaker. So his death must be seen under these circumstances, this context. Even today, treason gets the death penalty in most countries. This whole incident is very well recorded. But if you ignore the details, then all that you will be left with is the one line. A poet was killed because he wrote poetry insulting the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So dear listeners, do you see how people can be easily misguided if they are not educated about all the facts, all the details? And so just as one side, those who in the West are against Islam, use texts out of context to discredit Islam, there are also those who use verses and text out of context to discredit Islam by their misguided action. And these are Muslims. And so, dear listeners, that was something that came to mind. Of course, you may have your own views, and I am also okay if you disagree with me completely. And just on that subject about distortions and misinterpretations and so on, and also the negative image of Islam in the West, I came across an article a few days ago that really made me laugh. Two Dutch comedians stopped people in the street as if they were taking a survey and told them, please tell us what you think of these verses from the Quran. Then they read out verses such as the one which they read out this verse, which said, if you do not obey me, that is God, if you do not obey me but act with hostility against me, you will eat the flesh of your sons and the flesh of your daughters. Well, they read a few more blood-curdling verses like this and asked the people what they thought. One woman said, how could anyone believe this? That's absolutely unbelievable to me. Another said, cutting off people's hands. I mean, apparently that's the way they are. If you've been raised with this book and these kinds of thoughts, it's going to influence the way you think. So these were the type of comments. People were shocked that the Quran has such terrible verses. But they were even more shocked when it was revealed to them that these two comedians had actually put a cover of the Quran over a Bible from which they read the verses. So the cover said it was the Quran, but it was actually a Bible. Some walked away very shocked at themselves. Others laughed with embarrassment for thinking that they were condemning the Quran when in fact it was their own Bible. Nice one that, eh? Some bright sparks should, I think, try it here in Johannesburg or Durban. It's a great experiment to expose the hypocrisy of those who condemn Islam. Search online for this video. Type in just the three words, pranksters, Bible, and Quran. It's worth $1 million to see the faces of the mamparas as they are caught out.
Tell us about this youngest boy arrested in Australia as a terrorist.
Yeah, well, you know, this just fits into a wider picture, and this program is called The Big Picture. Now, I need to get something else off my chest. A lot of things on my chest this week. And so, dear listeners, here is my declaration, my open statement to the whole world. Maulana, you did tell me that the whole world is listening to Radio Islam, eh? Or are you just exaggerating?
A little.
Anyway, let's hope someone is listening. I am directing my comments to all those people who are thinking about or planning to take their AK-47s or Kalashnikovs and attacking people in London or New York or Geneva or elsewhere in the West. If you are considering blowing yourselves up in a coffee shop or a mall, I have a message for you. Please do me a favor. In fact, please do all of us a favor. Stop your nonsense, okay? Yes, stop your nonsense immediately. Get rid of the stupid idea from your head right now. The question I want you to answer is this. What do you hope to achieve by blowing yourself up in a bus in Chicago or Amsterdam? What is your goal? What is your objective? What did the two young guys achieved by putting bombs at the Boston Marathon. One was killed, the other one is now in jail. What did the guy who put an explosive in his underpants and got onto a plane to blow it up? He succeeded only in getting his underpants on fire and burning his dignity. But what if he brought the plane down and killed hundreds? What do you hope to achieve by such actions? Ah, yes, of course. You want people in the West to feel the same pain as they are inflicting on Muslims in Muslim lands? Is that your objective? To hurt them because they are hurting us in the Middle East and elsewhere, killing our mothers and fathers and our children, so we have to kill their mothers and fathers and children, let them also suffer. Is that what you hope to achieve? Well, you are right. They do feel the pain. They do cry and put thousands of bouquets at the place where the people are killed. So yes, you did achieve something. You caused them pain. And I'm not even going to address the issue of killing innocent people or that we can never take them as our teachers or about Islam has certain rules and limitations about warfare and militant action and so on. That is a separate debate. Nor am I going to address the issue of conspiracies. Yes, they do exist about young people unwittingly set up by security agencies and so on. I just want to focus on your objective that you want to cause them pain because they cause us pain. Then what? Hey, then what? After you cause them pain, then what? Well, I will tell you then what. You will achieve much more than you intended. Firstly, you would cause great pain to all the Muslims living in the West. Great pain, and it's getting worse for them. You went into a plane with a liquid concoction made out of chemicals you got from a hairdresser salon. Well, and you wanted to explode. Now all over the world, we have to take out bottles of water from hand luggage and throw it into the bin. But that's nothing. That's small. We are regularly pulled out of a passport queue for special questioning. But even that is small. Muslims are attacked in the streets. Muslim women are abused. Mosques are attacked. Here is a sample of what happened and is happening in the United States after the husband and wife team killed a whole lot of people at a social club just over a week ago. This is the latest report from CARE, that's the Council for American Islamic Relations. I'm going to read the headlines. Each one is a horror story. Here is what the report says. We have a little bit of Tamil, huh?
Yes, yes.
Here's the one headline. Muslims in U.S. report spike in discrimination. That means a surge in discrimination and threats. Threats against North Texas Muslims on the rise. Next headline. Muslims report more bias cases across USA. K in New York says, seeks hate crime probe of attacks on Muslim store owner. Minnesota Muslims report backlash, call for dialogue. Philadelphia welcomes investigation of pig's head thrown at mosque. St. Louis, local Muslim group reports threats increase Islamophobia. Police investigate fire, possible hate crime at Midwestern Somali restaurant. Man arrested for sending threatening messages to Kentucky Islamic Center. Pharmacist defends herself against verbal attacks for wearing hijab. After San Bernardino and Paris attacks, women are targets of anti-Muslim harassment. New Jersey mosque targeted with hate mail and phone threats. Idaho Islamic Center vandalized, police considering it a hate crime. Muslim sixth grader in school attacked by schoolmates called ISIS. Assault on Canadian Muslim woman in hate crime. Police investigating death of Seattle Central College student. Florida church posts anti-Islam sign. Anti-Muslim demo outside Texas mosque. Muslim leaders answer Obama's call to fight extremist discrimination and so on. Whole lot of headlines, horror headlines that if you read them, you will be absolutely shocked. Almost every day, Muslims are attacked. Yes, really, every day. I'm reading CARE reports every day. Two ladies entered a coffee shop. People shouted at them to go back to Saudi Arabia. No one in the packed coffee shop defends them at all, and they leave with tears in their eyes. And just a few days ago, a group of Muslim families are having a picnic in the park. They stand in line for Salah. An old woman screams at them, "Your Allah is Satan, na'uzubillah." And she throws coffee at them and attacks them with an umbrella. Muslims are violently attacked, and the attacks are increasing. A sense of fear has gripped Muslims. So, dear Muslim bomber, see what you achieved. you cause pain to those in the West, but you also cause more pain to the Muslims living in the West. After the Paris bombings, the right-wing anti-Muslim party of Marie Le Pen got a huge boost in votes. What do the votes say? Keep Muslims out of France and check on those who are living here. Take strong action against them. Close down mosques, raid their homes, harass them in the streets, clamp down strongly on them. So in America or England or France or any other country in the West, Muslims are under siege, feeling the pain that you caused. Now, I just read this morning that there are people in the United States who are canvassing. They're looking for members to form groups all across the U.S. like the Ku Klux Klan to attack Muslims. See what you've done, Mr. Muslim Bomber. Are you proud of your achievement? You husband and wife team attack people in San Bernardino, California. Why? Because you hate what Netanyahu is doing to the Palestinians. You had a fiery argument with the Zionists just before you went on your killing spree, and then you were killed. Now listen, we all hate what Israel is doing to the Palestinians. It makes us sick. But you decided to do something about it, so you massacred people at a social club. Ah, yes, you did it because America supports Israel, hey? Gives it weapons to kill Palestinians. So you have to go out and kill a few Americans, just any Americans, randomly. And what impact did that have on Netanyahu? Did it make him think, hey, you know what, let me mend my ways, let me stop my injustice, this killing in San Bernardino makes me think I must be become a better person? The answer is nothing, zero. After the Paris restaurant bombings, what happened? Thousands marched in Paris against radical Islamists, as they are labeled. And who was in the front line? Benjamin Netanyahu, linking hands with world leaders. What's the message? We, Israel, are on the same side as the rest of the world against these barbarians. We are fighting the mad Muslims whose religion instructs them to kill infidels. You are fighting them in the West, and we are fighting them in Israel. It's got nothing to do with human rights for the Palestinians or settlements or injustice. No, it's evil Islam. So let's march together. Let's unite against this common threat that we face. See what you did, dear Paris bombers and shooters? Let me tell you also about what you achieved. You think that by killing people in the West, you will stop or reduce Western attacks on Muslim lands? Well, after the Paris killings, France announced that it would be sending its fighter jets to bomb Syria. And earlier this week, Prime Minister Cameron got the vote for Britain to bomb Syria also. See what you achieved? You gave them some pain. Now they give us much more pain. And of course, your biggest achievement is to make Islam look bad. Muslims in the West are trying so hard to portray Islam as a religion of peace. They stand on rooftops crying out, to kill one innocent person is like killing an entire nation, and so on. Nobody is listening. They are deafened by the sound of AK-47 and pipe bombs. More and more people hate Islam. See what you have achieved? Now let me say this. There would be some people who support such actions. They may cheer every time that people in the West, in cafes or buses, are killed. They share the same sentiment. You in the West deserve it because of what you are doing to us. Such people are not living in the Western countries, in America or France. So they don't suffer the extreme backlash. We right here in South Africa don't feel it. Or maybe there is some hate speech on social media. But that is also steadily changing. So beware. So my message to you, dear potential killer of people in the West, if you feel overwhelmed by what you see on TV, the massacre of innocent men, women and children in Muslim lands, take a deep breath or take a cold shower or go and speak to a psychologist. Yes, of course, you want to do something. You want to hit back. I fully understand that. But it doesn't mean that wanting to do something means that you should do just anything. That would be mindless, unthinking, irrational and stupid. And of course, counterproductive. You want to hurt the West? You hurt Muslims much more. It's a double-edged sword. And so, my appeal to you is get real and get a life, okay? Don't waste your life in a useless exercise. Oh yes, if you think that you are doing some supreme act in defense of Islam that would qualify you for the title of a shaheed, then think again. Every indication is that you made a miscalculation, and very likely paradise won't be your destination. So if your head is filled every day with images of Muslim suffering and you feel that you can't take it and feel like you're going to explode, may I suggest that you go far away, out in the boondoos, in the desert, and there you can detonate your explosive belt, your explosive vest. Please leave us out of your personal jihad.
Okay, Donald Trump.
We've got time for that, Molana.
We don't have time for him.
Hey, Molana, you're too clever, too sharp, man. I can't keep up with your wit. Well, Donald Duck is such a clown and a very dangerous one at that. He is leading the race to be nominated the presidential candidate for the Republican Party. His popularity is at the moment about 35% compared to the guy who is second at 16%. And I just heard now 42% of Republican voters indicate that they support his call to ban Muslims from entering the United States. His party should be booting him out. But while some have criticized him strongly, others are not condemning at all. Why? Because if he leaves the party and goes on his own as an independent candidate, then he would split the party. And then the other party, the Democrats, will be in a stronger position for their candidate to be president. And yesterday, he threatened to do that, go his own way. And, of course, he can act independently because he is loaded. He doesn't need anyone's money. He doesn't have to bow down to any donors. He is free to say and do as he pleases. And he does just that. And people in America like him because they consider him a straight talker. They like that because they believe that all politicians are not truthful. They only say things to get votes. And with this Muslim issue, is something many Americans feel very strongly about. So they are not concerned about whether his call to keep Muslims out of the United States is constitutional or not, or whether it's unjust or immoral. All they are concerned about is security. And Muslims coming from outside are seen as dangerous, especially after the wife of the American Muslim who carried out the San Bernardino attack was found to have been given a visa in Saudi Arabia. So the Republican Party is scared to dump Trump, but others are ready. A university withdrew an honors degree they conferred on him. A big group uses his name to build golf courses all over the world has dumped him. A company with 150 branches all over the Middle East that stocks household goods bearing the Trump name has ditched him. So if this snowballs and hits him in the pocket, that may hurt him enough to shut his big mouth. But that's a big maybe. And finally, his anti-Muslim rantings are tutored by a leading Islamophobe, a chap by the name of Frank Gaffney. I don't have much time to talk about him. And he's been attacking Islam and Muslims for a very long time, and now he is in the Trump camp. Well, it's going to be a very interesting election campaign. And you know what? I secretly hope that Trump wins. Then I will have much more material for this program than what that Ullu George Bush gave me with his loony comments.
Light at the end of the tunnel.
I got only one. It's a bit longish, Molana, but here's it. Just an announcement on the 8th of April. I will be going on the Caribbean cruise to Miami, Florida, to Mexico, to Bahamas, and then we come out of New York. Thank you for allowing me that, Edward Molana.
Was it a joke?
I'm going to go to Florida now. A rather old-fashioned lady was planning a couple of weeks vacation in Florida, right? She also was quite delicate, very sensitive, and very elegant with the language. She wrote a letter to a particular camping ground, and she asked for reservations. She wanted to make sure the campground was fully equipped, but didn't know quite how to ask about the toilet facilities. She just couldn't bring herself to write the word toilet in her letter. After much deliberation, she finally came up with the old-fashioned term, and this is really old-fashioned, bathroom commode. But when she wrote that down, she still didn't feel very good. She thought she was being very forward. So she started all over again, rewrote the entire letter, and referred to the bathroom commode simply as BC. Does the campground have its own BC? This is what she wrote. Well, the campground owner wasn't very old-fashioned. He didn't know all these terms. And then, and when he got the letter, and he couldn't figure out what the lady was talking about, and that word BC really stumped him. After worrying about it for several days, he showed the letter to other people in the camp, but they couldn't also figure out what the lady meant by BC. the camping ground finally thought about it, and he came to the conclusion that the lady was and must be asking about the location of the local Baptist church. So he sat down and wrote the following reply. Dear Madam, I regret very much the delay in answering your letter, but I now take pleasure of informing you that the BC is located 9 miles north of the campsite and is capable of seating 250 people at one time. I admit it is quite a distance away if you are in the habit of going regularly. But no doubt, you will be pleased to know that a great number of people take their lunches along and make a day of it. They usually arrive early and stay late. The last time my wife and I went was 6 years ago. And it was so crowded, we had to stand up the whole time we were there. It may interest you to know that right now there is a supper planned to raise money to buy more seats. They plan to hold the supper in the middle of the BC, so everyone can watch and talk about this great event. I would like to say it pains me very much not to be able to go more regularly. But it is surely not for lack of desire on my part. As we grow older, it seems to be more and more of an effort, particularly in cold weather. If you decide to come down to the campground, perhaps I could go with you the first time you go, sit with you and introduce you to all the other folks. This is really a very friendly community.
Kalibi, as always, jazakumullah for your time and enjoy holidays.
Always a pleasure, Maulana.
Assalamu alaikum.
From some other place, inshallah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was the Big Picture program with A.B. Dowsey.